This is Viewpoint with attorney and author Chuck Crismeyer. Viewpoint is a one-hour talk show confronting the issues of America's heart and home. And now with today's edition of Viewpoint, here is Chuck Crismeyer.
I welcome back to Viewpoint. I'm Chuck Crismeyer. Indeed, it's conversation with ever-increasing conviction, talk that transforms. And I want to share a little ditty with you that I picked up when I was a kid. And it has to do with men. And it goes something like this. He is 20 and 11, 2 times 6 and 2 times 7. He is a young thing and cannot leave his mother. Let me repeat that just in case you missed it. He is 20 and 11, 2 times 6 and 2 times 7. He's a young thing and cannot leave his mother. That would make him about 54 years of age and still can't leave his mother. Sounds an awful lot like many in the millennial and Generation Z generations here today on Viewpoint. My, have we moved a long way from the great generation that ended in 1945 to where we are today, and how did we get here? How is it that real men went woke? How is it that we got to a position where men have become feminized and women have become masculinized? Well, we want to talk about that here on Viewpoint today, and I'm glad that you've joined us. It's conversation, as always, with ever-increasing conviction, talk that transforms. This matter of men has concerned me for a very long period of time. In fact, many of you know that a number of years ago, I wrote a book called Hearts of the Fathers, Leaving a Legacy That Lasts. Why? Because fatherhood has fallen on very hard times. Why has fatherhood fallen on very hard times? Because men have fallen on very hard times. But where did it begin? Where do we find in our culture the roots of this? And I think it takes us back into the mid-1960s. Right when my wife and I got married in 1966, hippiness came across the world. It came out of San Francisco. It came out of New York. It spread like wildfire, a rebellion against all authority, against God's authority, against law and order, and also it produced the sexual revolution. And what a revolution it was. And here we are continuing to experience the ramifications of it as it metastasized into feminism in the 1970s. Where is it going from here, and is it really possible for men to still be men? Well, helping us with this discussion, amazingly, is a woman. Dr. Gilda Carley, she's joining us from Arizona. She's written a book called Real Men Don't Go Woke, the book they would not publish, but the truth that should and must be told. Carley, it's good to have you on the program. Gilda.
It's
I want to call you Carla. Mistake. Gilda.
No, it's my pleasure to be here. Thank you very much for having me.
Well, I can relate to this matter of books not being published. I remember years ago, a rather well-known musician, Michael Card, joined me on this program. Remember, he was a musician, but he had written a book called A Dangerous Cross. And the word danger sounds an awful lot like masculinity. And so that's really what happened to him. He took his book, a small book called A Dangerous Cross, to six prominent Christian publishers. Every one of them refused to publish his book. Why, they said? Because the cross has fallen on hard times and doesn't sell well anymore. Well, real men don't sell very well anymore either, according to the woke culture, and it's very tough to get a book published on a Jesus that isn't feminine. What say you, sister?
I absolutely concur.
Jesus himself has been feminized, hasn't he?
Everybody's been feminized.
Well, is gentle Jesus sweet and mild? He speaks with a lisp and a limp wrist.
And a squishy belly, and he says, yes, ma'am, yes, dear, whatever you want, honey. And he has lost his voice and his spine.
Well, there we go. So today you've written this book, and it was very difficult to get it published, so you had to go an alternative way to get the book out. It's like paddling a canoe straight up Niagara Falls, isn't it?
Well, I have to tell you, I was a little bit deliberate in this title. Originally, I had 700 pages written from all the research that I had done, and it had a different title.
Uh-huh.
And I sent it to a very prominent agent who I had known. She had published my first book, Don't Bet on the Prince, How to Have the Man You Want by Betting on Yourself. And that was years ago. And when I brought her this book, I said, here's your next bestseller. And she looked at it and she said, I'm sorry, I cannot publish. I will not, no publisher of the big five publishers, and that's all she dealt with, they will not publish an anti-woke book. So I said, why? And she confirmed all the data that I had found. She said that the people who run the publishing houses are 30-something-year-old women, and they are all woke. They will not publish an anti-woke book. I said, well, how is this information able to get out? Because not everybody is woke. And she said, well, so be it. That's the way it is. And it is a business, just like the man who found out with a cross that wasn't selling so well. It's all about marketing and money.
Yeah.
And so we are caught in the crosshairs.
Well, Jesus had to find that out also.
Well, yeah. Well, a lot of prominent people have had to find this out. And so what I did, as soon as I heard they're not going to publish an anti-woke book, I said, well, if that's the case, I'm putting woke in the title, and I will get this published one way or another. And so I did.
Well, it's great to have you on the program. And the reality is that, as you say in their foreword, men are an endangered species. Now, when we talk about men, we're talking about real men. We're not talking about the feminized man. We're talking about real men. We're not talking about the touchy-feely guy that always has to speak with a lisp. We're talking about a man that can speak straight out and doesn't have to conform to new modern feministic expectations of who he is.
And also doesn't have to apologize for who he is.
Right. Well, so how do we get here? I was thinking about this as I prepare for the program, and it took me back to the mid-1960s. You know, there was a song that the Beatles wrote called He's a Real Nowhere Man. He's a real nowhere man,
yeah,
living in his nowhere land, making all his nowhere plans for nobody. Doesn't have the points of view, doesn't know where he's going to. So it seems to me that this effect on men began to take hold deeply in the 1960s. What say you?
Well, I agree with you. It started because women felt demeaned. Women felt as though they had no voice, and they wanted to speak up. And so we had women's liberation.
Oh!
And that ended.
So men got depressed out of women's liberation. We'll have to talk more about this
a bit
deeply. Real Men Don't Go Woke, friends. You want to get a copy of the book, $19. We'll put it in your hands. Excuse me, $17. It's on our website, saveus.org. We'll be right back.
Once upon a time, children could pray and read their Bibles in school. Divorces were practically unknown, as was child abuse. In our once great America, virginity and chastity were popular virtues, and homosexuality was an abomination. So what happened in just one generation? Hi, I'm Chuck Crismeyer, and I urge you to join me daily on Viewpoint, where we discuss the most challenging issues touching our hearts and homes. Could America's moral slide relate to the Fourth Commandment? Listen to Viewpoint on this radio station or anytime at saveus.org.
So good for you to join us here today on Viewpoint, confronting, as always, the deepest issues that touch our hearts and our homes. Yes, even from God's eternal perspective. You see, the first person that was made, we're told, was Adam. He was a male. The reason we know he was a male is because God observed that all the other species that were out there that he had created had a partner a feminine partner for them, but Adam had no such partner. So God, in chapter 2, created the first woman out of man, and together they were referred to as Adam. In other words, a name referring to humankind. Well, God saw that there was a need, that there was a need for a partner, a woman. But what happens when the woman decides not to be the partner, but to be the overseer? Well, did you know that the Bible actually tells us what happens? It started in Genesis chapter 3. Then came the serpent. Right after the marriage of Adam and Eve, then came the serpent. And he went for Eve. He didn't go for Adam. He went for Eve because of her feelings. And so she prevailed upon her husband. Her husband capitulated, and there was the first wokeness. He capitulated to the woman he was supposed to lead. And then God said, you know what? This is not a good picture for the rest of history. And he told us in Genesis chapter 3 that the woman would always be trying to control her husband, and he would have rulership over her. That's history. That's what God said about the situation. You may not want to hear it that way, but that's what he said. And we've experienced that ever since. So it's not something strange, because it goes all the way back to creation. But what is strange is how we don't want to live according to the holy, wonderful, balanced way that God had intended for male and female to live. And so that leads us to the problem we're in, men going woke. But real men don't go woke, says our guest today, Dr. Gilda Carl. And get a copy of her book, $17, and put it in your hands. You're going to want to get it. It's going to be helpful to you. Call us 1-800-SAVE-USA. Go to the website, saveus.org. Get it there, or write to us at Save America Ministries. P.O. Box 70879, Richmond, Virginia, 23255. Writing a check at $6 for postage and handling. Okay, turning the page over to you, Gilda. This is a serious problem that, believe it or not, people don't realize it goes all the way back to Genesis chapter 3.
Well, it's become even more serious because now we're finding that males are 4 times more likely to commit suicide than women are.
Uh-huh.
The men's life expectancy is declining. Their depression and loneliness is skyrocketing. Testosterone levels, especially in young men, are plummeting. The male Y chromosome that determines a man is a man is shrinking. And 90% of workplace deaths belong to men. This is outrageous what has happened to men. And when I speak to people, when I am on social media, when I see how demeaning women are towards men, it's making me crazy, because now the suicide rate of young boys is rising as well. They know they're called toxic. They don't feel that there's any outlet for them. And it's particularly dangerous for white men. They have been marginalized. They have been DEI'd. They have been told that they do not count and that the only ones who do are the minorities. And it's flip-flopping everything that has to do with our culture that believes in meritocracy. You work hard, you get ahead.
Yeah.
Somehow, if you are of a different color skin, you will get ahead with the DEI expression. And we have decided, we have seen, and President Trump has even enunciated this many times, DEI is the way to kill people who are wanting to make good on their educations and get ahead and look forward to something to be goal-oriented toward.
Well, it also diminished the manhood, maleness, and even the integrity of black persons in this country, because it said, okay, you can't make it. You can't make it, so we got to give you an up, an extra ability. We're going to give you the right over everyone else to proceed. So it actually, in effect, diminished the interior understanding of the well-being of minorities, didn't it?
It got, you're absolutely correct. And it got even worse when the people that they put into positions because of the color of their skin failed. And then other people turned around and said, you see, these minorities can't be as smart as white people, which was absolutely ridiculous. They gave them unfair advantages to get particular slots as in jobs. And as a result, these people were not prepared, right, not educated for these, did not have credentials for them. And then they failed. And of course they were going to fail. They weren't prepared for these jobs.
So well, what we have is a complexity of things. It's a complexity of things. Because we see also superimposed upon the attack on white men in their role as in masculine role. And then we see that the same kind of thing having happened in the overall culture that affected black men even the more so. And that is fatherlessness.
Absolutely.
Fatherlessness. Yeah. 70% of black young men have no father in the home. At least 70%. How has that played out? Well, according to the 50th anniversary of Ebony magazine that came out a few years ago, the whole article was on how this picture of the demeaning of black men has actually resulted in a situation where women in the black community do not trust the men. So you have a horrific composite of things working both on white and on black to demean men. And here we are perhaps on the near edge of the second coming, and our whole culture is demeaned so that men cannot even take the kind of godly and biblical leadership that they were supposed to be taking in their homes.
Well, I talk about in the book how my first career, when I started, I was a teacher in the crime-ridden South Bronx in New York.
Okay.
And there were only blacks and Hispanics, very impoverished kids.
Uh-huh.
And I stayed in that job for a number of years.
How many?
And I, 18.
18 years, that you really stayed then?
I stayed because I had a mission. I had a mission to make these kids understand that they needed an education to get ahead.
Uh-huh.
Not from the street vendors who were pushing drugs, but for themselves, for a love of learning. And this did not come from their community. This did not come from their homes. And they did not have fathers anywhere. All they saw of men were drunkards and drug-addled men who were walking the streets in a stupor.
All right. And did you get the left foot of fellowship from that system? For that educational system.
I got no fellas.
That's what I mean.
I got no fellowship, but I walked out of there alive. While I was doing my teaching, I was also enrolled in graduate school at night.
Uh-huh.
And so here I was teaching very challenging kids. And I was doing my graduate work, I got a master's degree, and then I got a PhD in educational leadership,
uh-huh,
thinking that I wanted to lead a school system as a school superintendent. I was certified as a teacher, as a school principal, and as a school superintendent. I was all of 30 years old when I graduated. That was my goal. You see, this is, I belong to the meritocracy. You try hard, you set yourself a goal, and you achieve the goal, you feel very good about this. And so when I went to get jobs to do what I had been trained to do,
uh-huh,
I was told, I'm sorry, we only want a Hispanic. I'm sorry, we only want a black person. Yeah. This is before Title IX. This is before any kind of discriminatory laws came into effect.
Yeah.
I was just told these things, and I had to suck it up. And, you know, God had, I thank you, God, because if I had ended up in a school system, I probably, the way they suck you in, I probably would have ended there. I would not have had a writing career, a television career. I would not be known for what I have done in my life. And I would never have been exposed or audiences exposed to me worldwide. So okay. I would have been cloistered in a little classroom. So yeah. Thank you, God.
Right.
But
you know,
you're going through it. You never think this is the right thing.
Exactly. You know, your story mimics or mirrors mine in very many ways. I taught school for 9 years in Baldwin Park, California, which had the highest, shall we say, residents in that district of ex-cons in California. It was compared with Beverly Hills. It was compared with Beverly Hills, the lowest socioeconomic with the highest socioeconomic. And so I taught school there for 9 years. And the last few years when I was going to law school in the evening. So, you know, we do have a very parallel kind of exposure. And, you know, I found myself initially, I taught math and American history. And then for the last 5 years, when I was going to law school and so on, I taught boys physical education, coached and so on, and gave myself to building up young men to be true young men. I modeled for them. I did not tell them what to do. I did what I expected them to do in every period of the day. And so they would have a model of what it meant to truly be a man, not that expected them to do something that they would that the man would not have to do. And it was probably one of the most fulfilling things that I had to do. But it was very tough, very, very tough, because you've got these guys coming from homes of ex-cons.
Oh,
you know.
Yeah, well, some of my kids had been locked up also. And one of them was locked up for murder. And they sent him right back to my classroom. And
that's because they knew you were a tough mama.
Well, I was, I was a tough mama. One of the kids said to me, "See that gold chain you're wearing around your neck, Peach? I take those gold chains. I snap them off women's necks." I said, "I don't think you'll be doing that in here with me." And that was it, and you sheepishly walked away. But these kids tested you every second. And the girls at 11 were getting pregnant. They asked me to cover for them. I said, "I can't. I'd be arrested for kidnapping you." I mean, they had no home life.
Yeah.
And I took some of them home, and I took a young boy with me, with my ex-husband at the time. We took him fishing. He showed great promise in my classroom. We took him fishing. And that was it. That was one experience. Do you know, 25 years later, he found me on social media. He said, "If not for you and your husband taking me fishing, I would never have known there was an outside world outside the South Bronx." And because of that, I am now finishing my MBA. I did a tour in the Army. I mean, I have had.
And you were talking about the young man saying these things. Yeah.
And the young man is saying all of that to me. And I said, "Really?" Now, I vaguely remember that. But one opportunity, one exposure to something other than what he had, did it for him. And he thanked me. So you never know. You just don't know how what your role modeling affects
that's true.
Them as.
Well, yeah, it's pretty interesting when you've been practicing law and you file a lawsuit and the person that shows up on the other side of the suit is the leading student in your first teaching class.
Oh!
That's what happened to me.
Oh, my God. I just got the chills.
We'll be right back after this, friend. Real men don't go water. They really don't. $17 to put it in your hand.
There is so much more about Chuck Chrismeyer and Save America Ministries on our website, saveus.org. For example, under the marriage section, God has marriage on his mind. Chuck has some great resources to strengthen your marriage. First off, a fact sheet on the state of the marital union, a fact sheet on the state of ministry, marriage, and morals. SaveUS.org. Marriage, divorce, and remarriage. What does the Bible really teach about this? Find all of this at SaveUS.org. Also, a letter to pastors, the Hosea Project, saveus.org, and many more resources to strengthen your marriage. It's all on Chuck's website, saveus.org. Again, you can listen to Chuck's Viewpoint broadcast live and archived. Save America Ministries website at saveus.org.
Welcome back to Viewpoint, friends. You probably do want to get a copy of Dr. Gilda Kerr's book, Carl's book, Real Men Don't Go Woke, the book they would not publish, but the truth that has to be told. And it's $17 on our website, saveus.org, saveus.org. Give us a call at 1-800-SAVE-USA. 1-800-SAVE-USA, or write to us at Save America Ministries. P.O. Box 70879, Richmond, Virginia, 23255. Writing a check and $6 for postage and handling. Now, interestingly, to take that little story a little bit further, Gilda, that young lady was a very small young girl, but extremely bright and precocious. And she had a wit about her that was not under control. And she tested my governance of the class. Literally, she openly tested my governance of the class. So I called her on it. Apparently, she did not have a father in the home. So her mother came in and spoke to me. And as a result of my taking the leadership to call her to task when most teachers would not do that, her life was turned around dramatically. And from that point on, after that class, she wrote a birthday card to me for 25 years in a row. And then became a lawyer. You never know if you stand up, if you stand and you're kind about it, but if you stand like a man and do what God called you to do, what you should have been doing as a teacher, it's amazing what can happen. Lives can be turned around.
Well, here I was called upon to teach these kids language arts skills, and I was getting something in return that was so valuable. They were teaching me street smarts. And what happened was that I took those street smarts and I became a college professor, taught these street smarts to my business school students, and I ended up on Wall Street as a performance coach, and I was training CEOs and their staff in street smart that they could never have gotten out of a book. So God was using me in a way that I was so grateful for.
Isn't it amazing?
Knew at the time.
Out of the strangest things.
Yes, out of the strangest things. And I do remember when I went into businesses, Wall Street to Main Street, I never told them that I had been in the South Bronx because that was kind of a demeaning role, I thought, at the time. But boy, did I learn otherwise. Now I tell people where I came from and my experiences and the value of those experiences. Because God is always using us.
Yes, he is.
Using us to instill the gospel as we have learned it.
All right, well, let's speak to a man out there. Let's speak to a man who might be listening, who has been struggling with this masculinized struggle where the lordship of wokeism and feelings has been superimposed upon him, making him feel whether wounded or banished or shamed or unneeded or angry or all of the above. What do we say to that man? How in the world do we encourage and strengthen that man to stand up and be a real man before God?
You know, I found these words, wounded, banished, shamed, unneeded, and angry, as men's new feelings because of all the literature that had that I had done in my research. And this is how men actually feel today as they have been demeaned. They walk out of their doors, and they're automatically called toxic because they're men. And so in an effort not to feel so toxic and not to be canceled and not to be castrated by the women who they meet, instead of that, they are going the opposite way into the woke direction. And they lose their spine and they lose their voice and they never tell a woman what they fear, what they feel. And vulnerability is a dirty word. So don't be human. Just be some made-up version of what these new woke women think these men ought to be. The men are suffering.
You know, we have the same problem. We have the same problem in Christian leadership among pastors and youth leaders and so on, who have been raised up in this woke viewpoint, this woke culture, and they carry that into our churches, in the relationship with our children, our kids, and even with the adults. Their messages become woke. They're feministic oriented. There's no backbone there, and they're afraid. Pastors are afraid to tell the truth because they're pandering to a culture that has gone woke. And it's like it's captured the entire church in this spirit.
They are not alone. A state senator saw me at an event, and I know I'm pretty involved in the community here. And she said, I have a 30-year-old daughter, and she's with this boyfriend. I don't know what to tell her anymore. She can't find a guy. I said, I hear that from 60- and 70-year-old women. They can't find a guy either. Uh-huh. And it's not that they can't find a man.
Right.
But they can't find a man with a spine.
All they can find is a wuss.
I don't wonder. A wuss. And no woman respects a wuss. And people, you know, I am spokesperson for the International Council for Men and Boys. And
wow, that's quite a job for you.
Well, it is quite a job. And they chose me being a woman because I am speaking the way a lot of these wussy men will not. I am leveling with people, and that's, I'm sorry, South Bronx moxie all the way. Thank you, Lord. and so I am out there and hearing from people from all over the world because it's an international organization, and this is happening in India, in Pakistan, in Israel, in I can name all these different countries.
It's the spirit
who are part
of the
our
age.
Organizations.
It's the spirit of the age on the near edge of the second coming of Jesus Christ.
Well, okay, and they have been pushed so far. They want to have, they think they want to have relationships with, they thought they wanted to have relationships with women. And now on TikTok, the men are saying, I never want to see a woman again. I never want to speak to another woman. I have had it. I'm telling my sons not to get married and not to have children. I said, well, that's not the answer.
Yeah. All right. Let's. You mentioned one young man, a girl that couldn't find a man. I have three. My three oldest grandsons are 27, 29, and 33. Only one of them is married now. The other two are struggling, saying, Mm-hmm. Where can I find a true godly woman? Where can I find a woman that is not wokeified?
That is so significant, because at least your grandsons are not saying, I'm never doing anything with a woman again. I'm never. At least they're not dropping out. They are saying, I'd like to find somebody who's different from.
Yeah.
And I do counseling, and on my website, drgilda.com, is an opportunity for anybody who needs this kind of counseling. And I am tough as nails, but I get the job done. I have people who I am counseling, men who I am counseling, who have given away their money, given away their soul, given away their spirit to women, and it's never enough. Because of these woke women, they are pushing the guys against a wall. Mm. And what I am telling men now, like your grandchildren, is that there is a difference, and you've never been taught about the difference, between real women and woke women. The real women are the women who say, I am not twisting myself into a pretzel to be loved by any man. I am my own person, and I will give, and I can love, and I am not calling you toxic when you show your vulnerability.
You mean like opening the door of a car?
Oh, a small thing like that.
For his lady?
Excuse me, yes. Oh, yeah, right. And do you know how many woke women will say, the nerve of this guy, he thinks I can't open a door for myself.
See,
ladies,
that's the feministic spirit trying to lord it over the man. And if you go to television and you look at some of the so-called best, cleanest programs, in every situation, the woman always opens the door. The woman always opens the door, because it's now endemic in the generation, the millennial and Generation Z cultures. The lordship of women to be equal, not equal in value, but equal in power.
It's a power struggle.
It is
for
a power struggle.
Women.
It really
is. And this is not what light and love are all about. It should not be any kind of struggle.
That's
and
right.
Especially a power struggle. We all have equal power in a relationship that we choose to form. And so we have to delineate our boundaries. Okay, it'll be best if you do this, and time-consuming for me to do this. And then you talk about things. You talk about ideas like the word propinquity. How close do you get? I mean, how much closeness can you bear? Things that have never been discussed before, I discuss in the book, because nobody is talking about these.
Mm.
And everybody must know about them. You just don't look at a pretty face or a handsome body and say, wow, let's get married. No, you find out about your essence. You exchange ideas and find out who you are, what your needs are, and how you can provide for those needs.
And the values that you have. We'll be right back.
Absolutely.
After this, the book, Real Men Don't Go Woke. You really need to get a copy of the book, friends. I think it'll be encouraging to you. $17 on our website, saveus.org. Saveus.org. Call us whenever you save. We'll be right back.
Have you ever considered what the early church was like? Many people are developing a heart longing for greater fulfillment in our practices as Christians. A recent study showed 53,000 people a week are leaving the back door of America's churches in frustration. What is going on? Why has there not been even a 1% gain among followers of Christ in the last 25 years? Could it be that God is seeking to restore first century Christianity for the 21st century? Jesus said, I'll build my church. Is Christ by his Spirit stirring to prepare the church for the 21st century? The early church prayed together and broke bread from house to house. They were family, and it was said by all who observed, behold how they love one another. Incredible.
But the same can be found right now. Go to saveus.org and click sell church. We can revive first century Christianity for the 21st century.
It's about people, not programs. It's about a body, not a building.
That's saveus.org. Click Sell Church.
Well, Welcome back to Viewpoint, friends. Today we're talking about what's happened to biblical masculinity, what's happened to the way God created men to be men, to stand, to lead their households, to be true followers, fathers, not just sperm donors. God created men to be men. They had a role. God had a role. In fact, he says, I am a father. Why don't you treat me like a father? You see, fathers and men go hand in hand. It's not just being a sperm donor. It's actually truly being a father from God's viewpoint. There was a man in the scriptures by the name of Eli. He was a priest and respected as a priest, but he did not rule over his sons. He allowed them to go roughrod over the women in the congregation, raping them, taking advantage, fraudulently dealing with the people, and he didn't correct them. He did not exercise his responsibility as a God-fearing man. You know what happened? God said, you're out of here. There isn't going to be one man that is going to ever stand to represent you in history. You have so defiled my expectations of what it means to be a man. You're not going to have any surviving males in your household. Any. And it happened very quickly. You want to read the story about it. God's not pleased with feminized men. He's not pleased with men who do not stand in the gap. There are two others that come to my mind. You might have others, Gilda, but the two that come to my mind from the Bible are the first man, Adam. Adam yielded to the persuasion of his wife, who was deceived. He was not deceived, but he yielded. He submitted himself to the deceptive, efforts of his wife, pleading with him according to her feelings. Because of that, we have experienced sin throughout the world ever since. The other one comes to me is a king. His name was Ahab. He had a wife whose name was Jezebel. She wore the pants in the family, and he said, "Aso, aso," to his wife. The net result is that the name Jezebel reverberates throughout all of biblical history as the symbol of female wickedness, and Ahab, the symbol of male weakness. We don't want to be like that. God's given us these examples, but then he's also given us wonderful, positive examples like David and some of these others, some of the prophets and so on, who stood and having all to stand, stood no matter what happened. Gideon, who raised up his sword and said, the sword of the Lord and of Gideon. Where are these men today, Yilda? Where are these men?
Well, they have been made woke in an effort to find love, thinking that that's really love. But what they're getting from these women is abuse and negativity and put down and cancellation. So somewhere along the line, they misread the Bible or they misread the lesson.
Mm. And yet, the feminization of men is actually promoted as somehow the new biblical example of manhood. The wokeness is presented as the biblical example of manhood.
That can't sustain itself, because look what is happening. Look, we have a choice. You have emotion. Everybody has emotion. You can either act it out, P. Diddy, or Harvey Weinstein, and that's really what we call toxic. Not the
that
man who
toxic,
walks in the street.
Yes.
That is toxic. But so you have that choice, or to act your anger in, and that will make you sick and fat and more longing to end it all. So what is the choice? The choice is to find out who you are, to stand your ground. And, oh, my goodness, I am getting so many men coming to me, and we're working on that. When somebody says about my book, somebody from a different part of our society, and says, oh, that word, woke, I said, fine. Rather than take apart the etymology, why don't you instead call the book Real Men Don't Go Voiceless, Real Men Don't Go Spineless? It's the
or
same
Real Men Don't Become Women.
Oh, how about that?
Yeah. You know, let me take you on a brief journey. I think I might be a little older than you, Gilda. And you look at how did this get started? I told you about the mid-1960s, the sexual revolution and the rebellion against all authority. By the end of the 1960s, a whole new realm of educational thought began to take place. It started in California, where I was teaching. And we were required to go on special training sessions on the weekend, unpaid, to be re-educated into how to talk. So you know about the fires in Palos Verdes. Well,
yeah, of course.
We had to go to Palos Verdes for a weekend to be trained in the new speak. And here's what happened. No longer were we able or allowed to speak in terms of that's true, or that's a fact, or I believe. You could not say those things anymore. You were required to say, I feel. I feel. I feel. Oh. That's where the lordship of feelings began to come in, that converted true masculine expression, true legitimate communication, into a orgy of feelings. By the time the mid-70s came around, that metastasized into the church. So the whole church from coast to coast began to talk in terms of I feel, I feel, I feel. The music changed. Everything became touchy-feely. The love of God replaced the truth of God. That's what's happened. And we see it playing out in the culture where men have been demasculinized and women then have raised up their heel. So much so that when I first began to practice law in California in 1975, men were the ones who almost always filed for divorce. Guess what? The last 15 years, the leading filers for divorce in America are women.
Are women, yes, indeed.
Women, yes, are taking up the role of men. And men,
yeah,
are taking up the role of women.
And here's what I hear. The women are saying to me, boy, I thought it would be a whole lot easier. I thought I'd be able to find a new man much more quickly.
Yeah.
I am surprised. I am still single. The men out there are awful.
Yeah.
I don't know why I even got divorced.
And now you
well,
see how it's just, all turned,
yeah,
on its head.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Of course. Everybody is enacting a gender that they're unfamiliar with suddenly.
Right. So I have a 30-year-old granddaughter who says, where am I supposed to find a godly,
mm-hmm,
man?
Mm-hmm.
Not just one that
and
believes
that
in God, not just one that believes in Jesus. Where am I supposed to find a godly man?
And what my answer is to my nieces, because I have 16-year-old triplet nieces, and what I say to them is, in order to find a godly partner, you have to be a godly partner.
Ooh.
And this garbage about you looking into your telephone all the time, your cell phone, looking in the mirror all the time, worrying about how you look and all of that, doesn't match godliness. You have to find godliness and then enact that role. Because we are...
Preach it, girl.
We are not who we want. Our partners are not who we want, but who we are. So we are who we are, and that's what we project, and other people pick that up. We don't have to say words. We don't have to say, watch me, watch me. Aren't I beautiful? Aren't I terrific? No, you just behave as godly, and the right people will come to you.
All right. That's the attraction principle. And there's a lot of truth in that. When I wrote the book, Hearts of the Fathers, Leaving a Legacy That Lasts, guess what? 75% of all of those books were purchased by women.
Mm-hmm.
Why? Because their men were not modeling godly fatherhood in the homes. And they were crying out, why can't or won't my husband be the spiritual leader of our home? This is a very complex thing. The overlays are unbelievable. And to sort it out, if we want to have what we would have, we must be what we must be.
We have to be it first.
Exactly.
Right. And be it, you will attract it.
There you go. Hey, thanks so much for joining us here on the program, Gilda. You're a special person.
Pleasure.
Really appreciate it. The book, friends, $17, we'll put it in your hands. It's on our website, saveus.org. And by the way, this is the last day that you can make good on the special offer that we have made that was requested by one of our listeners, that all of my books, 11 books now, are going to be available to you for one $154 price, $154. It is unbelievable. We have knocked down the price so low that it's just unbelievable. So if you want to take advantage of that, you got to do it immediately before the end of December 31st. Go to the website, saveus.org, find it there, and order that way. It'll be $154 plus $18 postage and handling. Or give us a call, 1-800-SAVE-USA. That's 1-800-SAVE-USA. And we'll place your order that way. Don't wait. This is the last moment. A lot of people are signing up for that because they realize, wow, I'm about to lose this opportunity. Don't lose it yourself. And don't lose the opportunity to get Gilda's book, Real Men Don't Go Woke. The book they would not publish, but the truth that has to be told. Become a partner with us, friends. Do it today. Don't delay. We're at the end of the year. This is an opportunity for you to demonstrate that you're part of what we're doing here. You're God's hand extended. You see, it's not about commercial advertising out there. It's about God's people participating in reaching out, touching people where they are, extending the message out, and you become a very, very important part of doing that. Go to the website, saveus.org. Make your gift today. Call us, 1-800-SAVE-USA. Maybe you want to take some of those coins that have gone way up in price and donate some of those where you aren't going to have to pay the capital gains above what you paid for it, and it will inure to tremendous blessing in this ministry. A few people have done that. God bless, be a blessing, and men, look, this is our moment. This is our moment. Let's not shrink from the task. And if you're feeling downtrodden, if you're feeling diminished, if you're feeling not quite up to it, let God do a wonderful thing in your heart. That's what he did for Gideon when he was hiding from the Midianites, and God said, I'm calling you to deliver my people from the Midianites. He was transferred immediately from being a weakling hiding, from being a mighty man of valor, saying the sword of the Lord and of Gideon. May it be so for you, my friend. God bless and be a blessing.
been listening to Viewpoint with Chuck Chrismeyer. Viewpoint is supported by the faithful gifts of our listeners. Let me urge you to become a partner with Chuck as a voice to the church declaring vision for the nation. Join us again next time on Viewpoint as we confront the issues of America's heart and home.